Today's show is being brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, believers in good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from roughly 12 to roughly, like, you know, 12:45, 1 o'clock from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Got a full crew today. We have, of course, Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah? Got Dave in the booth. How you doing, Dave?
Doing good. Got new equipment in here.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. That's why you sounded really, really strange and different this time around.
Strange and different, yeah. Bad, or strange and different, just strange and different?
It's new. It's new. We can't be afraid of the new.
Is it like, what, it sounds like there's like a phaser on it or something, like I'm about to be
you
in
just,
like
you
a...
You scream into the mic, so it's like compressing really hard, but I'm trying to fix it right now.
I feel like I'm in, you're too young, you know the band The Cars?
Yeah, how young do you think I am?
I don't know. Like, Cars is like the, you know, 70s. Anyway, and I guess 80s. They're big hits in the 80s. But yeah, I feel like I'm in the song Living in Stereo. It sounds like Rick Ocasek. I will not. Rick Ocasek, ugly done well, right, Stas?
Ugly done well.
Yeah.
Ugly done well.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, good for him. Joined with, we're back to take your kid to work life. We got Booker in the studio. How you doing, Books?
Unfortunately, I'm glad to be here, but unfortunately, it stinks that I can't be independent yet. Yesterday, we spoke to my neurologist.
Yeah. Do you want to tell everyone what she said there? Or do you not? Do you want to keep it to yourself?
I can tell. Okay. She said, maybe in January I'll be on my own again.
That's good. Yeah, you can't wait, right, to be independent again?
You're going
to
divorce your parents?
Not that kind of independent.
Oh.
No.
Freaking Hermie from Rudolph.
Independent.
Yeah. Oh, that was Booker doing that, by
so
the way.
Good, Booker.
That's very strong.
That's so wow. Good. Good.
I love my parents very much. Why would I leave them?
No, he just wants to be able to travel on his own college, like he used to. Like he can't, he has to be accompanied.
And treated like a 3-year-old. Mm.
Yes, which is not the case. He is not, in fact, 3 years old.
Because I'm going to be 16 in January.
Whoa.
Yes.
Can drive.
Oh, yeah.
No, you cannot drive in New York City when you're 16, Nastasia, little California girl. Oh. Like, you have to be 18 to drive in New York City.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm from PA.
Sorry.
You wouldn't drive anyway, though, right?
No.
No, he hates cars. We got Matthew from Booker and Dax Customer Service. How you doing?
Woo! Good, how are you?
Yeah, doing well. And we have Ariel Johnson from, I guess, from MIT now, right?
Yeah,
MIT. Right.
So MIT say from in MIT. Cambridge? Yes, that MIT.
Yeah. Booker has never visited MIT because he only goes to the Harvard when we go up to,
He's a real Harvard man.
Yeah, he totally is. Actually, what it is he enjoys the Sheraton Commander, which is...
Truly a classic Cambridge institution.
It's the best hotel to stay in when you go to Boston. I do have to warn you, though, the elevators are tiny.
Yeah, they are.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, but why do you like it? Because of what?
The room environment. The snack lounge.
Oh yeah, they've got those like fried chickpeas in the bar.
And they let dogs in.
Yeah, up to 80 pounds. But even though Major weighs 85, they still let us in.
Yeah, and Booker, I'm like Booker, just don't say anything. I'm writing down 70 pounds. He's like, Dad, Major weighs 85. He weighs 85 pounds. And
but
we
I've
have
been
two
forgetting.
Dogs.
I've been forgetting.
Listen, Booker. Everybody bends the rules a little bit, but it's all about just not saying anything.
Okay, but I just forgot. Anyways, the lady in the lobby was very nice.
That's good.
Yes, she was very understanding, but it could have gone the other way. You could have gotten someone who is a real stickler for the rules, Booker.
And a jerk.
Mm-hmm. And a jerk, yes, that could have happened.
Well, I missed you last time you were at Harvard. I think I was out of town, so you didn't get to visit us at the media lab.
Yes, yes. So anyways, for your pleasure, you may call in your being a 15-year-old questions.
You may call in your Nastasia the Hammer Lopez questions. You may call in your customer Booker service. And Dax customer service questions. Then that's Searsall or Spinsall related. By the way, any update from Amazon?
Yeah, how's that doing?
No.
No?
Still afraid of running out
of
stock.
So literally they've sold over half of their current stock in back orders, and they won't just ship them.
What have they told you, Matt?
A lot of things.
Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. Anything specific? No. Just
hey, really. we can't sell them because if we sold them, we run out. So, it's not good.
Truly infallible logic.
Logistical geniuses there. Yeah.
Or call in your sensory and/or MIT Media Lab related or chromatography,
flavor, chemistry, ecology.
Any of those questions to Ariel? 2-718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. And Dave, just if we get a caller in, just interrupt me, whatever, and we'll figure it out.
I always do.
But are we allowed to talk about the thing we just did the other week or not?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So I participated in a... By the way, this fits with the Harvard HOGO. HOGO. When tasting rums, you must taste for HOGO. You want to describe HOGO?
Well, HOGO is one word that people use for the kind of funky taste of funky rums.
What's another one?
Funk.
Yeah, but funk is
funk,
so...
grassy, funk, gamey, gamey,
it's not really grass, though.
Well, I mean, like, part of the problem is that we have this word HOGO and funk, but... it's not a lot of consensus about like what sort of more specific flavors it
Ray and
Nephews to.
And Smith and Cross, right?
Yeah,
so you
know,
just say
Ray and Nephews,
tastes like
Smith
Ray and Nephews, Smith and Cross. If it tastes like that or smells like that, if it's in that ballpark, HOGO.
Pot still Jamaican rums, rum fire, rum agricoles from outside of Jamaica. Things
but
that
that's
are, like,
more
that
of the
use,
grassy
like, whole sugarcane.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the question that we are asking is funk localized to just one thing, or is like grassy funk adjacent? Like, what is funk?
Like, funk is just, to me, more technically, unless you're saying something is funky in the James Brown sense. And by the way, Dax yesterday was like talking about dancing. I was like, have you seen James Brown's dance moves? He was like, no. I'm like, this is why your generation is doomed to failure. And so I showed him like a bunch of James Brown moves, and he was like, oh my God, James Brown is like amazing. I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's that kind of like that funk, right? Which comes from kind of funk meaning stinky, but like more of an animal stink. More like an armpity, sweaty, B.O. civet cat stink is really technically when you say funk, it's like animal funk, barnyard funk. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Not like, you know what I'm saying? It's like funky. That's why funky, I don't like funky. Like HOGO means rum related, like flavors that are hard to describe. Like Smith and Cross and like Ray and Nephews.
Right, but so if right now the best we can do is HOGO, it's funky, you know, it's like that thing, but not like a specific flavor, then that's not a very satisfying definition
of
HOGO.
Smith and Cross isn't a specific flavor, and Ray and
Nephews
is not a
specific
flavor.
Flavors.
Yeah, but like so when someone says this one smells of apricots, like that's valid, but somehow this rum smells like Smith and Cross is not valid.
Well, so if it smells like Smith and Cross, and it smells like Ray and Nephew, and it smells like rum fire, then there's probably some platonic higher level flavor above that that unifies them.
Ain't no platonic anything. Remember, love is writing, hate is philosophy. Plato. But the great writer. Love reading that stuff.
Truly.
He's completely, bat poop crazy.
The world is a cave and everyone is just watching projections on the cave wall.
I mean, it's like everyone's like, but don't you believe in the platonic? No, there is no dog.
Okay.
There is no chair. No,
all right.
It's garbage.
All right, Dave, all models are wrong, but some are useful.
All right, I'm all down. I'm down with useful. But back to this other thing. But that's why people say, instead of apricot, they're like, stone fruit.
Yeah, but there are... But, okay, so let's say you're smelling a glass of wine and it smells like stone fruit.
Right.
Like, there are sensory percepts in common between that glass of wine and a stone fruit. And, in fact, usually chemistry in common between the two.
Yes, agree. Right, but when someone's going to describe it, like, do you actually anticipate, because I've seen this happen, where someone's like, hexanol. I mean, like, or do you expect someone to be like, hey, this smells like grassy. I mean, in other words, like, what's the goal for? What's the goal for tasters? Like, that's what I'm trying to say. So in other words, to me, like, you want to instruct a bartender on how to taste this stuff. You're like, taste Smith & Cross, taste Ray & Nephew.
Well, I think using the word grassy and everyone meaning roughly the same thing when they say grassy is the most useful thing. Like, probably there'll be some hexanal if they smell something grassy.
Right.
But
it could be something else similar, right?
There's other, like, six-carbon aldehydes and alcohols and...
That's my next band.
Esters.
Esther Williams is always playing in the background, and it's six carbon aldehyde is the band, right?
Anyway. Too deep.
So anyway, so you were doing a test to see whether people could distinguish these things, right?
Well, a preliminary test trying to see if funk and hogo is a driver of separating rums from each other sensorially. Well, I'm still analyzing data, Dave.
So we're in this group of, I don't know, like whatever, 20-ish. We'll say it's 20.
More than a dozen.
Yeah, more than a dozen, less than 50. Yeah, so anyway, so we're in this tasting thing, and Ariel goes, there's no wrong way to group these. You can group these things any way you want. And then when I group them, she's like, oh, that's the wrong way.
There's no wrong way to group them, but you can't have overlapping groups.
Well, that's the way I grouped them in overlapping groups, Ariel.
Groups are distinct. You know, it's funny.
She's like, no Venn diagrams.
When I was in grad school studying these techniques, one of my professors was saying, you know, like, we like to do, expert panels are, like, fun to do, but, like, expert winemakers sometimes make, like, the worst panelists because they're bad at following instructions.
Yeah. Well, I took it as a challenge beforehand. I was like, I knew that I would do it somehow wrong. And indeed I did. All right.
That's why we did it twice.
Yeah, the test you like so nice, you did it twice. Okay, by the way, before we leave today, because I know it's approaching Thanksgiving, so I'm going to go into my pre-Thanksgiving spiel. Because we only have, what, one more show before Thanksgiving?
Two.
We're going to do a show on the Tuesday before?
I think so.
Okay. We're open, so it's up to you.
We're open. We're open. Are you? Are we doing a pitch for Patrick's Heritage Birds, or has he sold all of his birds so much we don't even need to talk about it?
I don't know. I haven't heard from that guy in a while.
Really?
Yeah.
He's AWOL on his... He should be...
He's AWOL MIA.
He should be armpit deep in Heritage Birds right now.
He may well be.
Maybe that's why you haven't heard from him.
Should be birding it up strong. Nastasia is a longtime cooker... And her mom, longtime overcooker of the Heritage Bird, right?
Oh,
yes.
Heritage Cinders.
So dry.
Yeah, she's
Heritage turkey.
The thing is like you either gotta cook it right or take it all the way to my favorite word, meat floss.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say Flavortown.
Flavortown. You know what? I forget who did a thing on him, and then people were giving him garbage for helping, you know, doing stuff for. Like a relief for the hurricane stuff. He's apparently like a super nice guy, Guy Fieri.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
That everyone who meets him wants to hate him and is like, oh, he's actually like a good guy. You know what I mean? So God bless him and whatever he does with his Flavortown-ness.
Sure.
You know, I would love to see him go do something Guy Fieri in Kyoto. He'd be like, oh.
This isn't big enough.
He's like, oh, train to Subtle Town. Like, you know, like,
that's like Guy Fieri meets Randy Savage.
Yeah. Because I don't really watch the show, so I can't really do his voice. Like, in my mind, I'm picturing the hair, but I'm just using that voice. But you know what I mean?
The face stuffing.
Yeah, Subtle Town. Special. Yeah.
So have you ever
takes,
seen
like,
the...
big handfuls of, like, cod sperm poached in dashi and, like, stuff.
Yeah, no, but the dashi, remember, is, like, basically flavorless dashi if it's going to be Kyoto style. Pull out the katsuobushi before it hits the bottom of the pot. Welcome to Subtle Town. You know what I mean? It's like, let's put armfuls of katsuobushi in and then, like, pull it out before any flavor is extracted and then, like, you know, either, like, make a stock that we serve to our dogs or throw it away. Kyoto, Subtle Town. But anyway, yeah, Americans don't really buy that so much.
Have you ever seen the fake menu for Guy's American Kitchen?
No.
It's so... I can't read it out loud without losing my S.
Yeah?
Yeah. So what was the acronym you used for?
Sugar honey iced tea.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Anyway, so I don't really know much about Guy Fieri's oeuvre, his work, but I appreciate him as a person.
I feel like it's taking kind of...
Speaking of sugar honey iced tea, in the movie Madagascar, the zebra uses that in the movie to replace the S word because Alex is about to attack him.
Yeah, and it's pretty funny that Chris Rock replaced a curse word since he is known for cursing.
Chris Rock is a great actor.
Yeah? Nice.
Oh, you know,
I like his voice.
You know who was behind me in my anger class yesterday?
Well, please let it be Chris Rock or some crazy non sequitur. Let's go for it.
Emma Stone.
Oh,
and I asked
girlfriend.
Her to describe Paul McCartney in one word, and she said, nice. And I said, that's the only word you can think
why
of.
Why did you even talk to her at all?
Why not?
What?
Well, why would you talk to anyone? Like, if I go to a class, like,
I asked her.
You're like, hey, I know that you're in. By the way, Nastasia goes to a class to increase her anger.
Harnessing your anger?
No, you just like yell and do a lot of.
Primal Scream.
All right, so now I got to know. Is she good at yelling?
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
I mean, she's an actress. I'm sure she's good at yelling.
Yeah.
Is she used this to like, is she have some sort of like role where she needs to yell constantly that she's practicing for? All right.
You want to take a call?
Yes, caller, you're on the air.
Dave?
Yeah, I can barely hear you. And tell that skid steer behind you to stop backing up. Messing around.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, what's up?
All right, I was just calling Thanksgiving related. I was thinking of doing some stuffed mushrooms or something but I want a really good recipe as far as that goes. Maybe something a little more edgy or fresh.
Hmm. Well, I mean, so like, are we talking appetizers here, small things, or are we talking about turkey replacements for vegetarians?
Like.
I haven't thought about stuffed mushrooms in a long time. Ariel, you got any stuffed mushroom action going on?
Not recently.
I mean, like, the trick is, right, whenever I go mushroom, I like to go, like, super duper over the top, like, mushroom on mushroom on mushroom. So I'll be, like, making, like, a... you get your dried porcinis and you make like a porcini stock, like a hardcore porcini. You know what would be good? Hey, this would be good. What if you did a porcini risotto, like almost like an arancini filling, put it on top and then fried those suckers?
That would be delicious.
Right?
Yeah.
So the trick with the...
It would be pretty good.
Yeah, right? The trick is to cook down, so the part of the mushroom that you're going to stuff into, or you could just forget the mushroom entirely and just do porcini arancini, which, by the way, sounds... Oh, with the chopped up mushroom stuffing, duck cells in the middle. Boom! Boom! That is going to be delicious right there. That is going to be delicious. Porcini risotto
stock with as well as... mushrooms inside of the mushrooms.
Yeah. So just do like risotto style. Just cook it a little bit drier. Let it set up, right? And then I would put a little. I would make like a chop up like mushroom of your choice. Not something heavy like a porcini. Something light like portobello or even regular buttons. Cut them up. Saute them down into like a nice, almost like a duck cells like you would use on like a beef Wellington or something like this. And then just like put a little bit of that in the center of the arancini ball. Take it around, bread, fry, and watch everyone go, oh my God, mushrooms, that's mushrooms, it's so good. So good. Right? Don't you think that sounds good?
Thinking, it sounds delicious.
You made me start thinking. I was thinking about like a fall squash as well, like a squash risotto with those mushrooms with like some chicken skin on top or something like that.
You know what my mom used to make that's just totally separate? She used to make a pumpkin-based lasagna. So not a red sauce. A pumpkin-based sauce, and so it's fundamentally it's like a pumpkin soup with ricotta and Parmigiano, and to tighten it up, she would toss into the sauce cavatelli along with the pasta sheet so that it wouldn't get too loose.
Wow, that sounds delicious.
It was, and she put mushrooms in, so it all ties together. Boom, boom, boom. All right, so go ahead, squash. Yeah, what do you got for me? You're gonna do squash risotto?
I was just saying, like a squash puree inside the risotto, kind of finish it off, and then with the porcinis and stuff, and then top it all off with some crispy chicken skin for a crunch.
I love myself some crispy chicken skin. I think people who don't like crispy chicken skin, they have some issues. They have some non-cooking issues. They have more like mental issues. There are people who don't eat chicken.
Everybody is entitled to their opinion.
That is not true, Booker. Everyone is entitled to their opinion.
You should know better.
The actual
except
correct
when it
statement.
Comes to chicken skin.
Yeah, the correct statement is everyone's entitled to their incorrect opinion. That's what you're allowed to say. Like, if you don't eat chicken skin, that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, you're a vegetarian, like, right. You know, whatever. You grew up slaughtering chickens for a living and you just can't look at them anymore.
That's valid.
You know, whatever, yeah. You raise chickens for fighting and you think that using them for food is beneath the chicken. Great. But it's hard to argue that crispy chicken skin is delicious. I mean, because it just is. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, if you make any of this stuff, please tweet back on at Cooking Issues and let us know how it worked out.
Oh, with the risotto?
Yeah, absolutely.
With the risotto, so like you like add wine into it as you're kind of stirring and sautéing it. If you take some dried porcinis, rehydrate them in the wine, and then use the like mushroom wine, it'll be really good.
Ooh, I like that.
So I'm gonna play the part of Nils Noren, like, you know, who I used to work with at the French Culinary Institute. I've been talking to recently. Nils Noren, his favorite fun fact was that all of the porcinis — I can't do a Nils Noren accent right now, I haven't worked up to it — but like all of the porcinis come from Sweden and then are shipped back to Italy and sold as Italian porcinis to the Swedes.
Wow. I can buy that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to get like a ton in Denmark, like wild forage.
And Denmark's like fake Sweden now that they're all famous. Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I'd get them straight from Sweden.
So correct me if I'm wrong, Denmark is Sweden plus pigs. Right?
And it's flat.
And it's flat. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but
well, there's a famous like story that sometimes the Swedish police will like pull over a driver in Sweden and they'll like talk to the motorist and be like, oh man, this guy's definitely drunk, and then they'll realize he was just speaking Danish.
Well, Danish sounds more German than anyway, whatever. Why are we getting to this? I'm just making fun of Denmark because they're riding high on a culinary cloud right now, so they can take it. You know what
I
mean?
The Danish word for porcini is Carl Johan Svampe.
Wait, Carl Johan Svampe?
Svampa's mushroom.
And who's this Carl Johan?
It's his mushroom.
Yeah, but who is he? Who's Carl Johan?
It's the dude with mushrooms.
That's crazy, crazy country. Can't believe that exists. Anyway, Dave, were you saying something?
No.
Oh. All right. So let's get to some other cooking stuff. Okay, no information on the Searsol other than that Amazon has quite enough of them. And Nastasia, how many do we have on the water?
24. They should be there, but they're not.
Searsol on the water. But there's under 2,400 on the water?
Well, they should be there.
They should be on land, on dry land.
But they're not.
No. Okay. Spinzols. We still have Spinzols in stock and in Modernist Pantry, so you can get them there. And then hopefully by the Thanksgiving time, we'll have them on Amazon. Who the heck knows, right? We're supposed to get another 500-600 in by the end of the year. I was doing some Spinzol work yesterday on, you ready for it? Durian. Mm. I was spinning some durians.
It has a horrible stench.
Yeah, so I went and bought a durian. So I've said this before on the air that I had this kind of amazing moment years ago when I made a durian custard in a pressure cooker, like, strictly by accident. So durian, speaking of funk, animal-based funk, right? Animal-like funk.
Fruit-based funk.
Funk. Yeah, but with the notes, it's a fruit that smells like it's got an animal-y thing to it. Yeah, right. Sulfur compounds in the case of durian, I think,
I believe so.
Yeah. And so as everyone who thinks about this knows, like, sulfur compounds, very reactive, weird things happen, right? In general, a lot of these very reactive. Yes. So that's why when you pressure cook things that have sulfur compounds in them, they change radically. Often they mellow. So mustard seeds mellow, onions, all alliums completely mellow out in the pressure cooker. Well-known fact, it happens. I once pressure cooked a durian because I was like, oh, this smells like it's sulfury stuff. Let me throw the durian into the pressure cooker. And the issue is durian is so thick that it...
And stinky.
Yes, that it cooks down and it literally caramelizes, not like not in the Maillard sense, like, because the temperature actually gets higher than...
Right, you literally pyrolyze the...
It turns... The sugar slightly. Turns brown.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also... Anyway, so let me get into it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do it now that I have the Spinzol. I'm going to try to clarify the durian so it doesn't scorch when you're reducing it. Mm. And so I went and bought a durian, which, by the way, they're expensive. They're super expensive.
They're not cheap.
They're super expensive. Yeah. I got 500 grams of pulp out of like a... How much did that weigh, Booker, that durian that we bought?
5 pounds?
Yeah.
But it seems way heavier because of the spikes.
Yeah. Anyway, so I open the durian, and immediately Booker's like, oh! And then I start blending the durian pulp. And by the way, durian is so Durian has like some sort of stuff in it that makes it incredibly custardy. It like it's got an amazing custardy texture, so it didn't break at all. So then I added some water to it, and it still didn't break at all. So I'm blending it, and Booker's like, "Oh!" And then I throw it into the spinzall, and I start spinning it, and Booker's like, and he was actually cursing. I told him specifically beforehand when we were talking about the durian that he was not allowed to curse on the air because it's a family show. But what were you saying without using curses, Booker? What were you saying about the durian yesterday?
It had. I was like, it fing stinks in here.
And he was like, he's like, I want to go get nose clips. I'm gonna. So anyway, so then, this guy knocks on my door, and he's like, we're looking. And okay, so for those of you that don't know. My building has been without gas because, like, some idiot put a screwdriver through the main gas line to the building, like, you know, a couple of months ago. And once you put a gas, once you ruin the gas line, they shut off gas to the whole building, and then they have to check every individual line, branch, and fixture individually before they turn it back on.
A resident did this or a worker?
A worker.
Oh, geez.
But my building is three elevator banks, 20 floors each bank, right? So it's big building. And so it took them, I don't even know if they started, it's weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks to get the permit, right? Because someone's got to stamp the permit, and then they have to test everything. So we potentially still are months away from having gas. So this guy comes to the door, and he's like, someone's complaining that there might be a gas leak up here. I went back into my New York mode. So I'm like, gas leak? There's no gas in the whole building. In the whole building, there's no gas. How can there be a gas leak? He's like, oh yeah, maybe they meant over in the other building. And he leaves. I was like, hey, it was a durian. It smells like just like gas. And so like when my wife got home, she was like, oh my god, it was so bad when I was spinning the stuff at night. Jen literally woke up, like the stench woke her up from a sound sleep. And she came out to try to, like, find out, like, what the holy hell is going on in our apartment.
It's like smelling salts.
Yeah, but it's a sign of a good durian, right? That it stinks like this. And now here's the messed up part. So it turns out durian has some sort of proteinaceous something in the juice, even once it's treated with SPL.
Is that what makes it stink?
I don't know, actually, where the sulfur stuff is, what makes it stink. I don't know. But the smell itself is probably not a protein, Booker, but the... I don't know what it is, to be honest.
It could be enzymatically derived from an amino acid.
Well, there you go. Well, yeah, that's why you should bring a real scientist on when you talk.
I mean, why are the acids so mean?
What, amino acids?
Yeah, they're so mean to your nose. They're so mean to your nose.
Oh, I get it. Ah, very strong. Is that your first chemistry joke?
One of them.
Yeah.
Nice
so,
one.
Yeah, that's nice strong. Ariel will use that in the future.
I will.
So, anywho... This is what I was saying, you know, like father, like son. Yeah. Anyway, I wish I could come up with something like that. So here's the point. So it didn't clarify very well. So I pressure cooked the juice that was left over. And unfortunately, the gaskets in my Kuhn Recon are gone. And so it leaks steam a little bit. And it reduced over the 45-minute pressure cooking. And when I opened it, it had characteristic clotting like you get when you pressure cook milk, which means that it is a protein. There was a protein in it. They clotted together.
It denatured.
Yeah, formed like a raft, almost like a those milk cookies that those like milk protein, like when you cook down like Indian
Swiss. Milk skins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like crunchy. Anyway, so it formed that and a really good caramelized durian juice that I had killed the funk on, but it was a little over. It tasted a little burnt. It was maybe like, you know, when you take something like and you take it 5 degrees too high and it just tastes a little bit burnt, so it's like still okay, but it's like, I wish it wasn't that. Like that. Yeah. Then I took the durian puree, put it that was left over from the spinning, which was very smooth, obviously, because it was in a spinzall. Then I pressure cooked that in a container in water, and it killed the smell, and it was actually quite good.
Mm.
Didn't brown as much because it wasn't reducing. It was in a water bath during the pressure cooker. So anyway, so preliminary success, but I'm not going to do that in my house again. And Jen, I was like, Jen's like, when you open the new bar, Dave... How the hell are you going to do this? You can't cook durian in your freaking... My goal is to have... I want to make a durian old-fashioned. So if you take the kind of, like, nice fruity notes of a durian and remove enough of the offensive kind of funk stuff such that it's not off-putting, which the syrup is not, but it's still characteristically durian, if you can do that, it would make a fantastic... like old fashioned with like a pineapple garnish, like, you know, like a, you take like a Lillet infusion into pineapple, garnish that with like a whiskey old fashioned with the durian syrup, everybody wins. But Jen's like, no one will step foot in your freaking bar if it's not. And I have to admit, even I was like, my eyes were watering with the stench a little bit. I was like, man, because when it's spinning, right? When it's spinning, when you're blending it, you're volatilizing all that stuff. And when you're spinning, you're volatilizing all that stuff. So, anyway, that was my durian. And Booker was like, I need clothespins, Dad, to shut my nose. You were not being very, what's the word, understanding. Were you, Booker?
But it smelled terrible. I promised I wouldn't swear on the radio.
You're doing good.
You said, what did you say? So I...
Yes. You can. It's okay. It's okay to hold back. Anyways.
You want to take a call?
Sure. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave, Ariel, it's Nick Devlin in the UK.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good.
Excellent, thank you.
Excellent. Dave, I have a Justino-related question for you.
Ah, yes, shoot.
We're making a Manhattan-style drink with a peach-infused rye that we're then batching and then holding, pre-diluting batching and then holding a minus 5 Celsius in the freezer. And it's going cloudy.
After how long?
If you had any thoughts.
After how long? Immediately or?
A week, 2 weeks. And then, because we're trying to batch in reasonable size volumes, but.
Right. And it's just peaches, booze, vermouth.
Dried peaches, booze, Petronex, and then Cocky Americano.
Okay. So typically, I have ascribed reclouding in spun liquors to a couple of things. In protein-based things, it's typically protein aggregation. So protein that is solubilized, like whey protein, for instance, will aggregate over time in the presence of alcohol, lose its solubility, and flock out and then settle, right? Mm-hmm. So in milk washing situations, that's typically what's going on. That's not what's going on in this situation because there's not that much protein in the peach that wouldn't spin out when you're spinning it out. I think what's happening is dried, like fully dried fruits like peaches, fully dried fruits like apricots have so much pectin in them that even during the spin out, I think there's probably some residual pectin. Pectin is also unstable in the presence of alcohol and over time will join to create a haze or a cloud.
I've had that happen making like bitters before with like citrus peel.
Right. So what I would recommend is hit it with Pectinex again. That should kill any of the residual, unless it's been functionalized so much that the Pectinex can't attack it anymore, and then see whether it settles out on you. If it settles out, I would say it's most likely a pectin haze. That most likely. I mean, it's in fact, I think I don't remember whether I answered it or not. So I'm going to talk about it again later. But Nastasia, did I answer that pectin question last week? The person who had the quince problem.
Yeah.
I answered it. I'll say probably a little bit more about it. But pectin and alcohol is very interesting. And, you know, it's a well-known test of pectin that it will aggregate and gel in the presence of alcohol. I don't know, frankly, what the temperature relation is on that, whether the freezer is I assume it is accelerating it. I assume it desolubilizes it because pectin gets less soluble as it gets colder.
Yeah, and if it's actually frozen, you'll be, like, preferentially freezing the water, and the pectin will be more exposed to the alcohol.
Right. Do you think that could be something? Especially if it's already pre-diluted, it's at a low ABV.
It could be, definitely.
Also, remember, in a brown... So, when you say it hazes, when it warms back up, does it unhaze, or does it stay cloudy when it warms back up?
It unhazes.
So, that is a oak polyphenol phenomenon, probably. So... all brown liquors, when they're over-chilled, haze, and then when they warm up, they'll uncloud. So
that's how chill filtering works.
Yeah. So, and it could be that the combination of the peach and the thing somehow clouds at a different temperature than just regular Manhattans alone. But I used to, at the bar, use as a visual indication of the correct drinking temperature that it goes from being cloudy back to being clear. And, you know, and that corresponds not because of a physics reason, but just because it happens to correspond to the proper, the coldest proper temperature at which I'll serve a Manhattan. So, also, like, if you're at if your freezer is -5, that's a very special freezer. You're using a dipper, like an ice cream dipper freezer or something like that, because most freezers are going to be rocking around -20 Celsius.
Oh no, we just jerry-rigged it with a PID controller to turn it on and off. So it's not absolutely -5, but it hovers between -4 and -5.5.
Because -5 shouldn't cloud. -5 should still be not cloudy. So it's interesting to me that, it's interesting to me that that happens. It could be like some combination of the oak and they're different phenomena. And I don't know, Ariel know much better whether those phenomena have any sort of interaction, pectin hazing versus the polyphenol, like the oak, I don't know what it really is, but why
it's oak elagitannins?
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. but like, would they interact with the pectin in any way? To form larger complexes that would cloud at a higher temperature?
I'm not sure. I know that they interact with protein a lot, but like that's how astringency works. I would have to look into that more.
Do you remember the old detergent ad, protein gets out protein?
No, I don't.
It was one of those stupid things. Protein gets out protein. They were like trying to tell you that this detergent had protein in it, presumably some sort of enzymatic garbage that it had in it. And they're like, and protein gets out protein. Like, that has meaning. That's like, have you seen this? There's this advertisement, I forget what it's for. I don't know, let's say it's like moderate to severe plaque psoriasis, because I have no idea. I can't keep track of all the medicines that are advertised on TVs these days.
Yeah.
It's always moderate to severe something. Moderate to severe something. And they're like, because 6 is greater than 1. We act on 6 things. The other one acts on 1. 6, by the way, greater than 1. That's why I love advertising. They're like written by people who have no idea what's going on with the actual product. I love advertisements written by people that have no understanding of the underlying action of what they're doing. Don't you? Love it. By the way, Nick Devlin is our comsol and our partial differential equation modeling expert. Did you know that?
Expert's pushing it, but
I knew he was like a physics person.
He's a sustainable energy house person, like
right,
trying to make
right,
their,
like heat modeling.
Trying to make and Nick, correct me if I'm wrong. Most people try to go too high tech when they're doing that, and don't just do the simple things to make their houses more efficient. Isn't that what you told me?
Yeah, that's exactly. You were listening.
Yes, yes.
That could be said of so many things in life.
Oh, yeah. When we met up in person in Edinburgh, I was functionally asleep. So it probably looked as though everyone was speaking to a mannequin because I was just kind of like sitting erect. But I was, in fact, absorbing information. By the way, for those of you that don't know me, that's the only function that I have on Earth is I absorb information and then later can spit it back out. So anyway. So, yeah. So for those of you that are like, you know, thinking about spending $8 zillion on whatever system to make your house more efficient, you probably haven't done the simple stuff.
That's often true.
Yeah. I find, by the way, right, Nick, look, same thing with cooking.
I'll have a bit. So when you were talking about hitting it again with Pectin X, do you think in the diluted state or when I've spun the booze out the first time and then hit it again with Pectin, or just wait, chill it and see what happens? Or
does the booze on its own cloud?
No. I mean, sometimes on some batches we sometimes see a small amount of haze.
Okay.
Not.
To me, that the booze on its own does not cloud leads me closer to the oak-based stuff being the problem, because the clouding on an oak-based liquor gets worse and worse at lower temperatures when it's more and more diluted up to a point, because those tannin things that I don't know what the hell they are that Ariel was talking about are less soluble in water
than
in
alcohol.
And so they have a tendency to complex more in the reversibly complex, whatever the hell is doing to make them cloud up, in the freezer at dilution than pure. That's why you can stick a bottle of bourbon in the freezer, and it's or rye in the freezer, and it's fine. And then once you make a Manhattan and put it in the freezer, it clouds. I don't. So if the booze doesn't do it on its own, it sounds like maybe the pectin is making it happen at a slightly warmer temperature than it otherwise would, but it sounds like you're really at a temperature-based, reversible temperature-based issue that has to do with the oak. That's my guess. But hit it with pectin, either before pectin X, either before or after, and just see. I would just do a small test and see. It's a real hassle to have to re-spin stuff, but
empiricism always trumps theory. So
yes, that's true.
Yeah,
and that also goes back to what we're saying about how people don't do the easy stuff. Mm-hmm. Same thing happens in cooking. People all these complex theories, and as Nastasia says, just go in the kitchen and do it. Why don't you just do it? Yeah. Why are you asking me all this theoretical stuff? Why don't you just go cook it? Yeah. See what happens. How many times you said it to me?
So many times.
All right, you want to take a break?
All right, Nick. Good to hear from you. We're going to take a break.
Okay, guys.
All right, come back with more cooking issues. Bob's Red Mill has been milling whole grains since 1978. When you mill whole grains, you get all three parts of the seed, the bran, the germ, and the endosperm. The endosperm is the main energy storage unit of the seed. That's where the growing plant gets its energy before it can start photosynthesizing and making its own. It makes up a huge portion of the grain, about 83%, and it's the main source that's used for white flour. When you make white flour, you get rid of the germ and the bran and just have the white endosperm left. It contains almost all the carbohydrates. It also contains protein and iron and some of the other B vitamins as well. It's kind of what you classically think of when you're thinking of flour. So all that's there when you're milling with whole grains, but when you mill with whole grains, you also get the bran, which is the kind of roughage and gives that kind of color to it. Also gives you extra fiber that helps you to be regular, and you also get the germ, which adds the fat and the flavor, which we all like from whole grains. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast. And we're back. We got Booker, we got Ariel, we got Matthew. Although Matthew, you haven't been saying much. Say a word, say something.
I'm between the mics, it's hard.
Between the mics?
Yeah.
Nice, all right. So
Between two mics.
So we had a question in from, hey, you know what? Ariel might know about this. It's good. I think I might have addressed it a little bit last week, but we'll readdress it since Ariel's here. Kyle writes in about cocktail aging. By the way, before we leave, we'll talk Thanksgiving. Just remind me when we have like a little bit of time left, we'll do Thanksgiving. I've been intrigued by, I think we did do this, by sous vide low temp method of mimicking the effects of cocktail aging. I've recently started tinkering with the concept with mixed results. I'm aware that Tony Cagliaro has been doing this technique for many years and more recently has produced a line of bottled Negroni. What do you think about using Negroni as its own plural there? Bottled Negroni. What an American would say Negronis.
Mm-hmm. So the Negroni is named after a person named Negroni.
Okay, well, yeah, but Italian lady, Nastasia.
Well, if it's a last name, then it would be Negronis, right? Like, if it was a Negroni family, the Italians would still say, well, it doesn't matter, they wouldn't say.
They'd be like, what's up with those Negronis?
Yeah.
There's no Negrono.
Right.
There's no Negrono.
Negroni is the singular.
Well, maybe you should come up with a Negrono. Do you think? I don't think anyone would order that. Excuse me, one Negroni is a Negrono, and I'll have one with my Panino when I go to Harvard. Right? I mean, that's like... Negrono. Anyone who says Panino, by the way, what are your thoughts on that? I would like a Panino. Like, have you ever seen it? I've seen it happen, right?
Oh, yeah.
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 I since when am I the great populist? It's not how I am, but what I'm saying is, like, I mean, a little bit, I guess, but, you know, I just think it's weird when someone says, it's like... It's similar to how for years I resisted using whatever Starbucks was trying to tell me to order the sizes.
Like a grande?
I would always say I would like a small.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, or like my classic one with, because I only really get espressos, all I get. I was like, I will have a double espresso. They're like, doppio, double. Doppio, double. And we see how many times they can go back. And eventually, both of us would just stand in silence staring at each other and the coffee would appear. But no one would give up.
I feel like there's situations where you're technically right, but you're a jerk because you're wasting the time of a person who's underpaid to deal with you.
Why not do it in crowded places? No, but the thing is,
aren't they wasting your time because they want you to like just use their vocabulary?
don't want to be forced into some stupid. First of all, they're all Americans. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be forced into using some dumb.
That's what I'm saying. I'm taking your side.
No, yeah. But I'm saying that, like, the clerk doesn't make that rule. They probably have to say that.
But, like,
they paid, like,
so, now let me take
$8 an hour to, like, argue with you about, like, what their, like, corporate is making them say.
So, in her mind, here's what happens. He's like, I come up. She's like, please not, please not, please not.
Not,
I'll have
not,
a double
not that guy.
Yeah, I'll have a double espresso. Dopio. Like that. And then she knows she has to go through it. Like, I feel a little worse for her.
Lord, give me strength.
Oh, but let me ask you a question. What is your feeling on allowing yourself to get... Look, the Starbucks Corporation has made a decision you don't enjoy, right? Mm-hmm. You're not so angry about it that you won't hand them your cash. But you don't like it, right? Your only point of interface is with this person. So she is bearing the brunt of it. But, I mean, what else are you supposed to do?
You could write a letter.
Write a letter?
Or tweet at them.
Tweet?
They probably answer.
Yeah, when you tweet at airlines, when you're, like, delayed or there's some other problem, they'll usually respond
faster.
That's true.
Companies are responsive these days.
Yeah.
Nah, whatever.
I mean, it's a greater problem of, like, the...
What if you say to them... I understand this is not your problem and you're just saying what you have to say, but I will only say double.
And they'll say, I understand, but I have to say this.
Well, you could say you could say double espresso and she says dopio espresso and you both know what each other is talking about and you can be like okay with that. It's kind of like if you're in Montreal and like you're speaking English to a clerk and they're speaking French back at you and you both speak like slowly enough that you know what the other is saying, but neither of you is like such a jerk that you're going to insist that one says one the other way.
You're like a diplomat here. I like it. I like it. Ariel the diplomat.
So
anyway,
model UN.
Yeah. So Tony has been
the first person that's ever said that about me.
So we're back to Negronis. Remember where we started? Aging Negronis. Remember where we started. Tony has produced a line of bottled Negroni that have undergone gentle circulation at low temperature for an unspecified amount of time to ideally to produce a more mellow and subtle town. We're going to subtle town. Subtle beverage. Do you have any suggestions as to time and temperature for circulating stirred and or built cocktails when the intent is to mimic the effects of classic bottle aging? By the way, built cocktails shouldn't age that much because you haven't really changed the proof appreciably and you're not adding any wine-based stuff. So I don't think they'll change as radically. A built cocktail is not going to change as radically unless the syrup is fruit-based or has something that's going to move, right? So, like, certain things move and certain things don't move. Like, straight aged distillates that are basically just distillates that have been aged tend after they've been bottled to move not very much. Say it's true.
Mm.
They don't move very much. Maybe they move, but not a lot. You know what I mean? Whereas things that have anything that is anything that's still reactive, like fruits or any non distillate based stuff, you know, that they tend to move when they're in a bottle. And can be changed by the temperature at which they're stored, the time at which they're stored, the oxygen level above the bottle, blah, 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 blah. Blah-bitty, blah-bitty. Anyway, do we have any times, temperatures? Also, do you leave some air in the bag when circulating to allow for mild oxidation or pull a vacuum and remove all air? My first attempt was, I believe, at too low a temperature or too short of a duration to produce noticeable results. It was at 48°C. My second trial was too high because the bag ballooned up and I was concerned about it popping at 58°C. It really shouldn't balloon at 58. Meh. Any suggestions or thoughts would be greatly appreciated, Kyle. So first of all, like, heating wine. So there's wine in a Negroni, so I would imagine that heating it is going to produce more matterized, oxidized kind of notes.
Mm-hmm.
And the oxygen. What do you think?
Yes.
But what do, what do you think? Any suggestions as to time or temperature or anything like that? And what do you think the primary thingamajig is with the bottle aging these things?
The primary, like, axis of change?
Yes.
Mm.
And do you like force heated?
Bear in mind, so if you're adding vermouth, like, that's already somewhat oxidized.
Yes. But we all know what happens to vermouth when you, like...
Right, it can be too oxidized.
What causes the peanutty flavor of, like, oxidized Martini and Rossi? Like, the classic, crappy, oxidized, overused vermouth peanut taste.
I want to say acetaldehyde, but that's
But you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's nasty. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
Not really.
Yeah, and it's turned me off of Martini and Rossi, which other people seem to still like, but like the growing up with that kind of half-open crap bottle of has ruined the whole that whole thing for me.
Right.
But so, but you, would you still agree that the main axis of change is the vermouth? It has to be, right? Well, you know what, though? Campari moves in the presence of acid. I know this for a fact.
I can believe that.
Like, in the presence of acid, Campari gets much more intensely bitter over time. Now, the not that much acid present, it's just the acid, the fruit acid from the vermouth.
Right.
But
that's still, like, a reasonable amount of acid.
Right. What are your thoughts on forced temperature aging in wines?
Who does that?
People, so there's a famous guy whose name escapes me because he was famous in the 1980s who had an amazing wine cellar, and his wine cellar was always at a fairly high, constant, but high temperature. And his argument was that his wines just aged faster than people who stored their wines in normal cellar temperatures. And I mean, then he did a bunch of side-by-sides.
That's why rums age faster in the Caribbean than scotches do in Scotland.
It's cold in Scotland. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But why you can have a longer age scotch than you can a bourbon, although bourbon's also newer barrels, so there's more extractives. It's a double whammy, as we say en français. But the
The Arrhenius equation says that for every 10, I might be butchering this, but 10 degrees Celsius raise in temperature, you'll double the rate of chemical reactions that are happening.
Yeah, I mean, roughly, right?
Yeah.
That order.
Yeah.
On that order. Well, that's what this guy was arguing. But so the point is, the problem is that not everything shifts at the same time.
Right.
So you can't you can't speed shift most cooking things because they're too complicated, because the rates trace 100% because it's only the first order correct.
The rates all increase, but not to the same degree.
Bing dingo. And that's why also
linearly,
when you're doing infusions, when you change the overall infusion rate, you change the... You change the resultant because things don't scale. Like, infusion rates of different compounds don't scale linearly with pressure, with temperature, with solvent. You know what I mean? It's like... Anyway, my point is, if you like it, do it. If you don't like it, don't do it.
Hey, we're coming to the end, so you better talk Thanksgiving.
Oh, jeez Louise, but I had some pectin. I had a methicillin.
Oh,
by the way,
be thankful for what you get.
Oh, so Justin also wrote in a while ago with a bunch of other questions, but he was interested in doing low temperature evaporation and asked about freeze-thaw concentration, similar to what's doing with Applejack. And I went to Cuisine Solutions, you know, Bruno Gusseau's company, Bruno Gusseau and Crea, you know, the guy, the juste temp guy, you know, who's like, doesn't believe in low temperature, but he's in juste temp. But anyway, so he has this new thing, not new, but it's cryo concentration, where on purpose they're doing freeze thaw and they're spinning it out in things like salad spinners and whatnot, and they're doing freeze thaw concentration on stuff up to fairly high Brix. And it's pretty interesting. And it's morally equivalent to freeze thaw agar clarification or freeze thaw or freeze-thaw gelatin clarification, because you're preferentially extracting the stuff out that melts first, which is why, you know,
like
why
ice wine.
Yeah, right. But in a non-alcohol base, because and the one that actually that they use, right, the analogy that they use is when you buy an icy or a slushy or a slurpee and you stick your straw in the bottom and just keep on a sucking without stirring, you end up with white ice and all of the syrup in your mouth. So anyway, so yes, you could attempt. So I would look up cryo conservation on the Cuisine Solutions website.
Is this Thanksgiving related? Or?
It is about to be Thanksgiving related. Here's my pitch. When all of you guys out there are thinking about what you're going to do for Thanksgiving, take into consideration this idea. Two turkeys. One turkey? No. How many turkeys, Ariel?
Zero.
No. Two turkeys.
Two turkeys.
First of all, if you're going to cook a big Thanksgiving, this is for people who are going to cook a big Thanksgiving.
More turkey skin? Or?
Well, that is actually, is that true? Yes, you will have more turkeys.
The issue is that
big turkeys, A, are more difficult to cook than small turkeys properly because it's the way the physics works, and they take longer. But you can cook one, if you're going to cook a small-sized bird whole, much easier to get a small turkey to be decently done, and we can talk about that later, whether it's brining, just the breast via injection, whether it's low-temping, whatever. You need to bring a whole bird to the table because of America, and then issues, people. But then your second turkey, you break it down into small pieces and you chicken fry it, right? And you can cut them into the same sizes that you chicken fry, and then you have a basket of chicken fried turkey. If you wanted to, you could pan off or cacciatore roast individually, whatever. But break apart one turkey and serve it piece by piece, cook it exactly the way it wants to be cooked, or rather the way you want it to be cooked, but to its specification. And then just do a smaller whole roast bird that you bring to the table. And you know what? Everyone will be happy. The roast bird they can eat for leftovers on turkey sandwiches, which is kind of what God wants you to do with the turkey anyway, because turkey sandwiches are so delicious. So anyway, so more Thanksgiving questions, but take that advice when you're planning this year, cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage.